So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this week in wrestling, Indies International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy, man. Timothy, what's going on besides my oversleeping today?
Same old, same old. Stomach is not feeling great, but, you know, I'll power through for the people. Otherwise, not much. How you been, Pete?
Doing good, man. Got my observer ballot in my email the other day. This will be an interesting one, you know, with Omega finally getting on the ballot. And we'll see how, because in no shape or form is Kenny Omega a Hall of Fame person right now. Legitimately being maybe a draw for maybe a year, maybe 2 years tops. Unless you really want to get pushy, maybe. You can try to push the DDT stuff, but, I mean, on paper, he's just as good a candidate as, like, not even as good a draw as Kerry Von Erich was, and Kerry Von Erich isn't a Hall of Famer either, so, and I'm not a guy who, you better be the world's greatest worker to get in on Work Great or Own, and I don't think Kenny Omega, he doesn't fit my bill, but it was with the world's greatest worker, but he does fit the bill for a lot of people. But I don't see him as a Hall of Fame guy right now, but I'm curious because I think he will go in though. And I think that's a shame when these guys are just going in when he has never even had a cup of tea in the WWE. He hasn't, I don't even think he's hit his run really as a star performer. And, I think it'd be a kind of like a, it'd be a cheapening moment, if you ask me. What's your take on Omega as like a Hall of Fame ballot guy?
I don't think that there's any room to talk about Omega for the ballot for the Hall of Fame right now.
Right now, right?
Realistically, with the people who are available, you know, who are on the ballot, like, I don't see how you vote Kenny Omega without Shima. Like,
right?
I think that comparison is ridiculous, honestly, when you compare the two. I mean, you can say that Kenny has the DDT stuff, but I mean, in DDT, I don't think that he was ever the sole draw. It was really kind of the same as it's kind of being right now. It was a combination of him and Ibushi. Even at his best, I honestly think some of that gets overblown. I mean, at his best in DDT, he was always the number two to Ibushi. I don't think that there was ever a time that he was considered a bigger star in DDT than Kota Ibushi. So then it's like, how do you have him above Kota for the Hall of Fame then? Because that was the longer term time, you know, just because he was doing junior mid card matches longer than Ibushi has been signed to, you know, New Japan or whatever. That doesn't make a difference really. I mean, so I think realistically, if you're going to vote for someone from the Japan territory for the Hall of Fame this year, I think, he's not the only logical candidate, but I think he's a glaring candidate to compare to say, like, if you're willing to vote Kenny Omega, then I don't see how you don't vote Shima. Longer term draw, same body of work. I mean, longer body of work, obviously. But same level of work, I would say, if you're really into Kenny Omega. I don't think you could argue that Shima hasn't had as many good matches, varied styles, singles, tags, trios, scrambles, all that action, ridiculously over everywhere he goes. Then you start getting into influence. I mean, the training obviously is huge. The amount of people who, not just the Dragon Gate guys that you think of, but the guys who show up in WWE who got better from stints in Dragon Gate. I mean, a guy who just showed back up in Dragon Gate, Pac. That guy was good, but he became great in Dragon Gate. You know, you got Ricochet, same deal. Matt Sydal, Kevin Steen even spent time in Dragon Gate that helped form him. El Generico, Sami Zayn, you know. So it's kind of hard to argue that you would put Kenny in the Hall of Fame before Shima. And so to me, that's like Kenny's name shouldn't even be on the ballot yet, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has a long ways to go, in my opinion. I don't want to say I got heat, but I remember I didn't vote Daniel Bryan last year because I thought he was still going to make a comeback. And so I still thought he had a lot of story left on his story to tell. And people voted him, a lot of people voted him in because of they thought his career was over and they thought he had a Hall of Fame career. And I can see that argument on work rate and some other stuff. But I still thought he had a story to tell, and you know, hindsight proved me wrong. Right, he does have a story to tell, and we'll see where that goes, and will that help or hurt his Hall of Fame candidacy? I think the biggest one of the biggest glaring flaws with the Hall of Fame is people show up way too soon before we have before their career is even remotely finished. And we're voting people in way too soon. Kenny Omega right now is like in his hottest run that Kenny Omega's ever had. And does that influence people because you're in the midst of this hottest run ever? I still think he has a long way to go. I don't think Samoa Joe is going to get voted in. But you know what? I think Samoa Joe's a better candidate even than Kenny Omega right now in 2018 is. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a tough one to me. I can see arguments for Joe over Kenny in a lot of ways. But I also think it's tough to... I wouldn't say he's a strong candidate, honestly.
I don't. I'm not... Just Mojo's not getting my vote.
Right.
I don't even think he might even get it. I think he might even fall off the ballot.
Right, which is insane because, like you just said, Kenny Omega probably will get in.
Yeah.
And Samoa Joe will fall off the ballot. And I think... I wouldn't safely 100% say Samoa Joe Kenny is a better candidate than Kenny, but I'd say it's arguable enough that it shouldn't. One guy shouldn't get in, and the other guy shouldn't fall off. You know, that
you definitely have that debate, and you definitely have that debate. And when one probably will go in, and one probably fall off the ballot. And when I feel like there's a very debatable argument on that thing, really, it's quite, you know, again, jarring. But again, well, I'm talking in hyperbole here because I don't know about what's all going to happen. I guess, see how it shakes out. But
I just think curious. It's tough. I mean, there's how much talk is there? The idea that Meltzer almost shouldn't be the one running the voting process and selecting the people who vote and everything because he also, you know, so much of what he does influences people's opinion. I mean,
yeah,
I feel like his star ratings have become such a thing that people actually consider that to have some kind of meaning. And so because Kenny has all these crazy 6-star matches in this, people think that makes him worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. But I mean, you know, the Slack chat just had a meltdown the other day because of patron saint of all wrestling pedants on the internet, Akira Taue's name was brought up, and Dave Meltzer had some fucking bullshit to say, basically that, you know, all the people who worked with Taue said he was bad to Dave. And it's so funny because Dave will use that as proof in some cases, and then other cases he'll openly say, you know, wrestlers, you know, talk about this guy like he was so good because, you know, it was a night off and he was lazy. And that meant that you didn't have to work hard because that guy would make you look good and you didn't have to do anything. But then when it turns around and they're talking about Taue and they say that they didn't like him or for whatever reason, it doesn't creep into his mind that maybe their problem with him was he made him work too hard. Maybe he didn't sell enough. Maybe whatever. I mean, why is that?
I will admit, I thought Taue was the worst of the four pillars, but I still think he's a Hall of Fame candidate.
Yeah, I'm saying that doesn't make him bad. And Meltzer was talking as if because people who had worked with Taue said he was bad, that means he's bad. I'm sorry. Wrestlers, I love you guys, you know, but maybe you should, write some opinions. Maybe do some star ratings before you start trying to critique other wrestlers, huh? How many times have you done podcasts?
Then Terry Funk, who I hold in high esteem, and I know Dave does, but Dave even laughed at it, said that Matsunuda Tanaka was just as good as the All Japan four-pillar guys. So what does that fucking...
Right.
There's no... fucking way Tanaka is going to Misawa, Kobashi, Kawada, or Tawe.
Right.
That's just garbage.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous, and it just goes. Like, Dave...
But Dave, I like how Dave is able to, because it fits Dave's narrative.
Right.
He's able to say, well, these guys don't like say Tally's a bad worker. And he agrees with it, because he agrees with that narrative, but because he disagrees with the Terry Funk narrative, he's able to laugh it off.
Right, exactly. That's exactly it. It's oh, you know, you have to listen to the boys. If they say someone's good, they have the true, you know, kind of final statement on who's bad and who's good, but he'll completely eviscerate that attack when wrestlers constantly use that against him and against anyone who tries to critique matches, talk about how many times have you been in the ring, you know, and he even openly says that's not the fucking point. The whole point of critiquing wrestling, what me and you do, isn't knowing how to do wrestling. It's knowing how what we watched is perceived. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's two different, separate things. So it's
we're not movie critics, but I mean, they're not movie critics either, but I damn well guarantee you they can critique movies and music. And
right.
I know people always hate that comparison, but I mean, a lot of people do. I mean, that's why you go and you have that, what's that stupid website?
Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean, that's why there's a Rotten Tomatoes out there.
Right.
So people can look and see what other people's opinions are of a movie before they go check it out. So, yeah, all right. Well, let's move off on the Hall of Fame. We'll be probably talking about it for the next few weeks here and there.
Yeah.
WWE's on a big hiring spree.
They sure are.
Like Punisher Martinez looks like he's on his last legs in the Ring of Honor. He just did the job, did the big JOB to, I think,
Jeff Cobb.
The Cobb, but Cobb's going to be the TV champ going into there, and I guess Cobb is going to be a big player in Ring of Honor once his Lucha Underground contract expires, or he gets out of that and he's able to combine that with the New Japan. So I think that's going to be great for Cobb. But Punisher Martinez, that's an interesting name. He's a guy who I always thought had a high ceiling, had a good look, kind of tailor made for the WWE, big guy who's athletic, can do high spots. But man, he's also a guy I can see easily get lost in the shuffle in the WWE NXT universe. Rumor has it they're on a big hiring spree because they're going to keep one NXT on the network, and then another NXT is actually going to go on to cable television.
Yeah, and I mean, saying that about Martinez is, I mean, it's just a blanket statement for anyone right now. Though I don't think that there's a single wrestler, I don't care what level of over there, you could be Matt Riddle, and you know, the guy who just oozes charisma and can back it up in the ring, and is, you know, he's attractive for the, you know, the fans who are into that side of it too. Like, he's good looking, he's the total package, and I could still say he could get lost in the shuffle in WWE easily.
Yeah.
You know, so Punishment Martinez on that same list, obviously same company, anyone can get lost in the shuffle WWE.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But mentioning Riddle, that was a talking point I talked about when Punishment was first showing up in ROH, and it continues to be. It's kind of interesting, Punishment showing up in ROH, or showing up in NXT around the same time as Matt Riddle. Those guys have history, they train together, they've wrestled each other a ton. So that's really interesting that they both happen to be there at the same time. We'll see what we get out of that. It seems WWE is on a bit of a big man kind of hiring cycle right now too. They're hiring more and more big guys, which is, it's just so funny, man. As soon as, you know, they kind of seem like they're somewhat comfortable, it seems that's what they go right back to, gravitating towards the big guys. It seems like they were on a little bit of a run there because they saw so many of these little guys were game changers and getting over, they wanted to sign them. But once they're feeling comfortable, they're just going to sign all the big guys mostly, right? That's what they're looking for.
That's Vince's MO, and I mean, yeah. I think right now they're looking out there when they're main roster, and I'm not seeing a lot of big guys on that roster, and you see the guys turning over, like this Undertaker's career is winding down, you have Hunter's career is running down, Cena, and these, not all of them are big guys, Kane, but you know, these guys are all, but all of them are all over 6'2", 6'3", you know, and so they're looking at it like, wow, who are we going to replace these guys with? I mean, you had AJ's definitely grabbed the brass ring. But other than AJ, for the most part, and I guess Braun Strowman, no one's really been grabbing that that brass ring and rings, I guess, too. So they're looking at bottom line is even a lot of the smaller guys now in the WWE, I'm not saying they get lost in the shuffle, but they get their push. But in the long run, they just like pushing bigger, larger than the life characters, like, you know, Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, AJ's the outlier right now. But I mean, they have plenty of other guys who they have no problem using them on the mid card or upper mid card. But even the guys who were on top a year or two ago are now kind of sliding up to, you know, semi main, lower main, like the Seth Rollinses and the Dean Ambroses. They look at them more as like mid card or upper mid card as opposed to being the man type of thing.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And it kind of feels like nobody's the man, really. I mean, other than Roman Reigns being, you know, but it just doesn't feel right because
popular. It feels so fucking weird because anytime your lead babyface gets booed, I mean, with Cena, it's fucking weird, if you ask me.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, it's true. So we'll see how they move forward. Some of these guys have a lot of potential. I mean, a guy who's, talk about lost in the shuffle, right? But a guy who's really, to me, feels lost in the shuffle but has all the potential in the world with Axel Dieter Jr., Marcel Barthol, or whatever. What have we seen him one time to come out to lose to Keith Lee, and that's all he's done? And
yeah,
he feels like a guy that leaps off the page, honestly.
He might be a guy they move over to the UK NXT side. I mean,
yeah, and I said it, but to me, he comes across like a Randy Orton with like just a little bit more work rate, you know, like
right,
like kind of indie style work rate. I think Randy Orton's obviously a very good technician in the ring, but it's so funny that it's like, how is this guy getting overlooked? You know, he's got that pedigree. Sure, it's not a guy who's ever been in the WWE before, but his dad was a wrestler. He's got the poise. He's got the size. He's got the look. And they're doing nothing with him. It's just wild, man. And the WWE UK thing, I mean, obviously they're signing up a lot of talent for that, a lot of big-time talent. And there's a lot of interesting news going on with promotions in Europe, you know, who seem to be changing their structures and moving things around. And look at Progress, and it's like, I just feel like Progress, how long is it for this world, you know? How long do you really need Progress and WWE, you know, NXT UK and all this? And these guys are getting gobbled up. I heard that just the other day, I heard there's an Irish tryout, a WWE Irish tryout for all the guys. Basically, if you're following wrestling right now, you know that Irish wrestling is OTT. And the rumor that I heard is no age limit. They're doing the tryout, and they did not care how old you were. If you're a trained wrestler, come on down. Well, that OTT scene has a school with students who range, you know, from anywhere from 16 to 20. And they're basically saying they will take any of their guys. They're just going to snatch them all up. And some of those guys have a lot of potential right now in OTT's, from OTT's contenders. I mean, a lot of OTT fans at this point talk about the contender shows, which is the student shows, as being better than the big main shows with the imports and all this. So,
right,
you know, it's just WWE is looking to just get everyone and to just destroy the scene, you know, and just rip everything apart. And people are still just, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, talking about stuff like it's so great. And we got probably the only fucking guy who stands in the way, and even how much does he really stand in the way, but the guy who feels like he's the, you know, waving the Jolly Roger for the independent wrestling scene, Joey Janela, he's out injured now. So
yeah, I mean, that's even, you heard, that's even worse than those.
Yeah.
News is even worse than what was anticipated, so that's really scary.
Yeah, so it just feels like, God, who's going to, you know, hold indie wrestling up in all of its weird, you know, glory with Joey Janela out and WWE just seemingly raiding everything? It's just, it's scary, man, because for me and you, we both really like this stuff. And it's true that one guy gets, you know, signed to WWE, and usually two or three guys pop up in his place that are, you know, kind of taking that spot all over the place. But we've seen it in 2018 with the amount of people that were taken off of the indie scene. This year has been weird. I don't think that there's a consensus number one pick like there normally is in a lot of ways. I think the number one is up for grabs to a lot of people. And I'm hearing people talking names that would have sounded crazy just a couple of years ago based on their output, the amount of matches that they're having, where they're wrestling, stuff like that. But that's just how weird and stratified this year is, that no one stands out, you know, because all of these guys should have been. Most of the guys who are getting pushed as top level indie draws are guys that should still be on the mid card, while a Chris Hero is in the main event, you know, And that's kind of what's happening right now.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. And even, like, even if you look at Evolve, which is, you know, kind of a sub-company of the WWE, they've completely turned over their whole roster now, pretty much. It's a whole brand new roster. I mean, there's no Yehi, there's no Riddle, there's no Callaway. I mean, there's no
Zack Sabre Jr.
No Zack Sabre Jr. You know, so, I mean, they're bringing in the Stricklands, the Janellas, that ilk, and it's completely new. Anthony Henry has become a big player there. I mean, it's completely different company than it was. Hot Sauce, they parted ways. I mean, he was like almost like the last guy standing almost, and he's like, yeah, fun doing being the Powerbomb champion and going all over the world and doing it that way. It'd be just be different, but I'll still be exposed. And I mean, like you look at him, Hot Sauce is a great worker, but he never looked like the type of guy that WWE would go for.
No, and we're talking about this Hot Sauce in general, and I think the real thing about Hot Sauce, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have it factor.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He just really does not. And it's just, no matter how good he is, yeah, I don't think he's a guy WWE would get into because they don't need another technician. You know, they got Drew Gulak, who's the same level of talent in ring, probably, honestly, better in ring.
And better. Oh, yeah. I like Hot Sauce. Don't get me wrong, but I think Gulak smokes him. I mean,
yeah, and Gulak is, I mean, probably one of the best wrestlers on the planet, if we're really talking about it technically,
yeah,
grappling, and he's on 205 Live, and he's got personality that actually makes him a standout on the show. But he's just toiling away doing nothing. And again, that's another guy. He should be the Powerbomb TV champion. And, you know, Hot Sauce should be, you know, underneath him learning how to fucking maybe get some personality and stand out his own way once he's in that position instead of being forced in the position right now.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, not particularly, especially not MLW, but let's get to it.
Yeah. MLW Fusion episode number 24. We get this long, I really don't know if I like this or I didn't like it, the episode long angle of Havoc and Callahan fighting. In one way, I thought it was kind of cool because every time they panned to it, it added a little bit of element or a little bit of pizzazz or it popped off the page when it happened, right? But then you got to realize there's no fucking way they were brawling for an hour. So it becomes, like, unrealistic that this is really happening for an hour. And so so then it lost me. In one aspect, I thought, oh, this is kind of cool to keep popping into it. And it adds, like, it adds stakes to the show. And it gets you excited because it gives you a kind of like a taste of an adrenaline. But then when you think about it, it's like, okay, there's no fucking way these guys are brawling for an hour backstage because that's just dumb. I mean, in any workplace, if people were brawling backstage, it'd be broken up by the people who A, own the building or your company. So there's just a lot of flaws in the whole entire theory. And I liked it. I mean, I thought it was cool that this is how they're trying to set up a match. But I think people would be more invested in them brawling backstage in their match than in their match. So what do you think about all that?
Yeah, I kind of hated this. Just the whole thing throughout the show. Havoc, I mean, what did he throw Callahan down the stairs like 3 or 4 times throughout this?
Yeah.
He just repeatedly, I mean, it doesn't make sense. These guys couldn't go at it like this for this long. Especially towards the end, they still are acting relatively fresh for guys who have supposedly been just killing each other, especially getting thrown down the stairs repeatedly. I think it was too overbearing. I think you could have cut back the number of times that you cut to it, and it might have been better, but cutting to it in mid-matches with the picture-in-picture thing and stuff like that just kind of overbearing. Feels like, you know, WCW, what's the NWO up to right now? You know,
that's exactly how I felt, brother.
Yeah, it's in the middle of a match, but it's like, we got to cut to this. We got to see what these guys are much more important. And yeah, I just, and it was presented as part of the episode, which is annoying because the, you know, MLW Fusion episodes list the matches that are going to be on the show, and they had Callahan Havoc as one of the advertised matches here, but it wasn't a match, you know? So that's annoying for me as well. So for me, I disliked every part of it. I get where you're coming from, that the action was good, but to me, I'm, you know, it's also part of a big part of why I don't like really follow Lucha that much, is because it's really hard for me to take stuff seriously when it's presented so cut up, so just pieces, so edited that way, you know. It's just, I don't know, it just makes me feel like it's not being taken as seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wasn't putting the angle over, so I get you. Then we got Jason Cade versus Myron Reed. You know, I don't know, I'm not, are you feeling this Cade heel work here?
No, not really.
It feels like he's playing heel as opposed to being a heel. Does that make sense?
Definitely. And I don't like his heavy wearing just gym shorts and having just like random kind of nasty looking dreads. He doesn't have a look that complements Cade really at all.
Yeah.
So that doesn't help. And yeah.
And then you bring Myron Reed in, which we have not even seen him on the show, have we? Or we have. He hasn't been in a position where he's been pushed.
He may have been in one match that we've reviewed before on the show, but he has not been important.
Yeah, so you kind of knew where this is going. You know, I will say a second. What's his name? Giddens?
Yeah, it's something like Gideon, something like that.
Gideon's okay.
Yeah.
I will say, he doesn't compliment him, but he does add a wrinkle to the matches. Here he sets up Cade's heat. So, I mean, like, for what he's doing it fine in his role. I thought Reed looked great in this match. Big moves getting over. The fuck finish adds to heat to Cade, but not sure if I may buy Cade again as a top level heel guy. I don't even buy him as a mid level heel. And so, I mean, I think I'd rather push Reed as a baby face here. And Yuta comes out post match. You know, and the thing is, we're getting a lot of these fuck finishes on the show, and I get it as a way to build heat and to set up matches, but it's almost becoming predictable, as opposed to, like, I'm expecting a fuck finish now as opposed to a clean finish, and I get why you do it, but sometimes you might want to just give us a finish then. Do the angle afterwards type of thing. I gave it 2.5. And I enjoyed Reed a lot in this, but Cade's just heel work. It just seems so freaking put out there. Just so over the top. It just looks like, hey, look, I'm a fake wrestler. I'm not really a bad guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, how do you put it? I'm not enjoying this run at all. What was your take here?
Yeah, I'm not digging it. I'm with you on that. Reed looked really good here. Reed, I don't know what his deal is, honestly. Feels like a guy who was getting some buzz and people were talking about him, and then feels like he disappeared.
You think part of it was because of the Elgin brush?
Probably part of the Elgin connection does not help him. But yeah, he takes some cool stuff. The cutter to the floor is nice. I like that, and the big man there does help with that. I agree with you that I think it's Rhett Gideon, I think is his name.
That's it.
He adds something, and his work as the guy on the floor is good. I just would like something. I don't know. I want him to look. I know it almost probably sounds cliche. Like I want the big man in the suit or something. You know, I want him having a look. He just looks like he rolled out of bed, honestly, and I just...
I think that's a fair point, because, like, I mentioned, I'll mention it later on, on NXT when they're doing these interviews, I think Adam Cole's star power goes up a bazillion percent when he's wearing a suit.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and you know, then we afterwards we get the post match promo stuff that sets up the match and I don't know. I mean, this feud feels like it should have been over, and then it felt like it was just gone, and then they brought it back, and now they're like trying to resurrect this dead feud, and it's so weird to me.
Yeah, a feud that really no one wanted anyway, no one gave a shit about.
Yeah.
And they're pushing it still. Yeah, it's like, fuck. Cut the cord, baby.
And yeah, I don't think we talk about it, but I don't know what their plan is. I just get into it. I mean, obviously the both guys cut promos. Yuta's was pretty good. Cade's felt super fake and put on, like you said. And they're setting up that they're gonna both be in a three way against Maxwell Jacob Friedman for the middleweight title or whatever. And it feels so bad, like sticking Maxwell and the title into their feud. Just seems so forced, and I don't think
well,
they need it.
I think it might be because of the Janela injury.
I guess it could be. Like, it was just they were going to keep going with Janela and MJF, and this is just something for MJF to do, I guess. I feel like you could have just gone with Yuta, though. I really think that Yuta is at the level, he's good enough, that you could have just done Yuta MJF and completely forgot about this Jason Cade stuff. So,
well, you could have, but the problem was that Cade beat Yuta last week or 2 weeks ago or whatever.
Right. I guess you want.
And if you're following that logic, then why would you give him a title shot?
Yeah, I mean that's a fair point.
And then I mean I think what they're doing is like, okay, these guys they'll fuck each other over, and MJF will pick up the scraps type of shit. I'm assuming that's exactly what's going to happen.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, that's the plan, and I just don't know if I care about that. I think when you do something like this, it has to feel like a hot feud. It feels kind of like when NXT did it with they were doing Gargano and Ciampa and throwing Aleister Black in there when Black gets injured or whatever. And it was like at least that feud still felt kind of hot. It was already getting a little bit stale, but I think if you're going to do this, you have to have that hot feud. I think the best example to me in the history of it was the stuff with Mike Awesome and Masato Tanaka, and then they just threw Taz in there to put the title in there, and it worked out because Taz needed to leave. That feud was hot. It made sense. Like, there were so many parts of that where that worked so much better, and it feels like I've never really seen it done that well.
As well. It was pretty damn good with the book, and it elevated the feud by having Taz in it, and then because he's leaving, this then became the main event feud, so... it worked so good on that level. You know, we get a bunch of interviews from everybody here. We got a Yuta interview. We get a Brody King interview later on. We get a Strickland interview. And then we get a Filthy Tom interview. I mean, there's a lot of interviews here.
Yeah.
But you know what? When they were doing it on like NWA Saturday night shows and stuff, they had all-time great promo guys.
Right.
And so... You got Ric Flair cutting a minute promo. Dusty Rhodes cutting a minute promo. These guys flat out are just very boring and don't know how to cut a fucking promo. I thought Filthy Tom's was the best.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but the rest of them, I was like, God. You know, they can work in a ring, but man, you got to fucking work on that character work. I mean, practice. We need to get these promos to get your character over and get your fuse over. But fucking, let's practice, boys. Brody King needs to come across a hell of a lot more menacing in his promos. Strickland was solid. Lawler was good. Yuta, I thought, was solid. And he was good in the fired up role. But again, I'm just not buying that feud, so I don't give a shit what he's talking about. What do you think on all these promos and stuff?
King's was written well, and he delivered it well for it being scripted, but he did lack fire and sort of menace. But it had some, you know, it had some cute kind of turn of phrase lines and just like the word kind of wordplay to it, or I guess not necessarily wordplay, but not lyrical, but like, you know, kind of lyrical style to it, that it had something more to it. What he the actual words and the phrases and what he's talking about, but yeah, it's not like all time great. And I don't think you can outright someone's kind of promo skill. I think you could have the best writers on the planet, and if your promos aren't good, the people delivering the promos aren't that good, it's not going to matter.
I mean, I hate to say it, my SCI hot dog eating promo was better than anything on the on the show, honestly.
Yeah, right.
And that's not me tooting my own horn. That's just fucking sad. Fuck.
Strickland, I think Strickland, I worry, and it's weird because, you know, I don't know what the fuck is going on with the MLW stuff, but it's like, I feel like you really devalue his star presence when you have him talk in situations like this. He's not bad, but he comes across like a big time superstar when you just get to look at him and he's just coming to the ring and then he starts to wrestle and he delivers and has the intensity and the fire. It's not just the wrestling. He comes across like a character that you get invested in, and then he talks like this and you don't care. And it's funny because in Evolve as a heel, he's been great. So it's just, I think he's a good babyface here in MLW, but just not on the mic. And then, you know, obviously I think he's actually a pretty good promo as a heel, because his work in Evolve cutting promos and everything he's been doing lately has been great. He really feels like the focal point of the entire company, which is good now, especially with Janela out. Those were the two guys they were going to be leaning on, and it's a good thing that Strickland was clearly feeling like he was out and ahead of Janela in importance, with Janela going out, because then you still feel like you have the more important guys still around. But it just feels like if MLW may not be worried about devaluing him, though, so they don't care, and they'll just let him do stuff like this that doesn't look good. And Lawler was very good, and I think it's funny because it was kind of almost a promo that countered my talking points last week with Lawler about him being a guy who appeals more to, you know, the board and the kind of people who pay attention to, you know, the Observer and host podcasts, guys like me and you, and guys who are even a little bit more into the Dave Meltzer kind of oeuvre, or not even Meltzer, more like Brian Alvarez oeuvre. And then this promo really felt fired up and like the kind of promo that could appeal to just anyone and not necessarily that kind of fan. So he kind of proved me a little bit wrong.
Clearly, Lawler's a you know, fan of wrestling history, and you know he watches those old tapes of the old stars and like what made these guys stand out, what made them different, and he takes that to heart, and he's become I think Lawler, to me, is one of the best guys out there when it comes to total package between the talking, working, look, and doing so many different – he works so many different styles of wrestling. He's not just work-shoot guy. He can do that, but he's far, far evolved from that style and stuff. He can do so much. He can show ass. I mean, yeah, the guy – fucking guy's good.
Yeah. No, he's just all around thoroughbred athlete, obviously, but has the mind and the psychology for wrestling as well, not just in ring, but also getting over promos, everything. So, yeah, obviously, very, very good guy, and the guy that they really should be focusing on in this company.
Exactly. You know, he's won when, I mean, he's won the Rumble. He's been the number one contender. I mean, maybe they're trying to drag out because they think him and Low-Key is a big time match.
It could be.
I don't buy into the Low-Key aura. I think his aura was kind of blown up, especially I think to the hardcores when he, you know, fucked off his booking at WrestleMania. And I think that took a big blow to his aura and people being behind Low-Key, because I think a lot of people felt fucked by that, not getting that main event, even though the Suzuki main event, I mean, was fantastic and was a better, I mean, was, I think it was an upgrade. But, you know, I think a lot of people still, I think Low-Key's aura has taken a hit.
Oh, no, that's for sure. That's for sure. And I mean, he phones it in a lot now. I think that, you know, wrestling fans famously have short memories. The idea that, you know, the WrestleMania Riddle match is what, you know, sticks in people's minds because it's recent, but it's like, it's not new. You know, this is Loki's
history.
This is his history. He does not, you know, work well with others. He does not, you know, like to be super professional. If it doesn't work for Low-Key, if it doesn't help Low-Key, he doesn't usually want to do it. You know, but he can have, and he does here. I mean, when we get into the match, I mean, there is still something there in 2018, and I had completely written him off. I saw him live, at a PCW show, and I can't remember who he was wrestling. It was either, ACH or maybe even like one of the Lucha Brothers or like Phoenix or something. Oh, actually, you know what? It was Loki and Drago, and I think it was originally booked as a different match. And, you know, Drago is Drago, but Loki just stunk up the joint and just stalling. I mean, you wouldn't expect Loki to be playing, you know, Larry Zbysko, but he was. And I'm just like, he doesn't have it anymore. But in 2018, he's had two pretty solid performances with this match and with the tag match with Walter and Devlin and David Starr. He's had a couple really good performances, and actually even some of the stuff he did last year with Homicide in the WXW Tag League, to mention something that's going on this year, the Tag League again this year, which is exciting. So there's, he still can bring it, but it's rare. It's few and far between, you know, and actually it seems to be predominantly tag matches is where his forte is now, nowadays. Yeah. But yeah. But I do think that they could build to a Lawler-Loki match. I just think that the foundation isn't there. But that's also something we'll get into when we review the actual the main event here.
All right. Oh, yeah, in between all these, you know, mediocre interviews, we got more Callahan and Havoc. The brawl continues.
Right, and they showed the matches for the Fury Road pay-per-view or whatever it is. So, yeah.
Then we got a Low-Key versus Phoenix. a match I liked. But, you know, I Low-Key seems dated as a champ already. Though if they're building him in Lawler, that it might work. If they do it right, it could be interesting. I think Phoenix is just an amazing high spot worker, and he's an amazing worker, period. Low-Key's we're throwing some stiff ass kicks here. We got some mask ripping. Low-Key's heat is very methodical here. Flash of a comeback by Phoenix, but gets cut off. Was well done. Phoenix is busted open, and Low-Key works the cut a little bit, but it just isn't. Again, I thought Phoenix's selling was really well done. I thought Phoenix's comeback were timed well and cutoffs were timed well. I thought Low-Key, it looked like Low-Key was playing a little too much to the audience, or was getting a little bit over, or maybe Low-Key was counting him on his charisma to carry his heat, as opposed to, I mean, I really thought Low-Key should be beating the living shit out of Phoenix's forehead. And been more vicious. He was vicious, but he was more calculated, as opposed to really taking it to him. And I thought it hurt the match a little bit. I thought Low-Key's comeback was fucking awesome. I thought that again, we got a cheap finish for the heat, that adds to Low-Key's heat, that's what I'm saying. Maybe they save this for once on the show. But when there were only two matches we really had, we both got cheap finishes or got cheap heat finishes. It doesn't help anybody because it just neither one really gets to stand out. I wouldn't be wasting it on a Jason Cade match. I give it 3.5. I thought Phoenix was excellent in this, and I thought Low-Key was good. But needed to tweak up the violence a little. And a lot of people will say, oh, man, what are you talking about? His violence, he busted him open and was mass gripping. And I thought that was great. But I felt he could have been a lot more. I thought he could have been a lot more in his face as opposed to, working the crowd in between, ripping the mask and busting him open. But I thought it was a heck of a match these guys had. And I'd like to see them do it again. 3.5 stars. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I pretty much there with you on everything there. Low-Key, you know, Low-Key's work, you talked about working the cut, and he did some of it that was more up front, but I think that it was kind of more subtle, and it played into the methodical style that he was working, like you said, is I took it as kind of, after the cut went down, then from there he was throwing big strikes here and there, and then repeatedly telling the referee to check on him, count him, whatever it was, to see if he could get some kind of you know, blood stoppage, or just, you know, that the Phoenix is so out of it that the match is just going to get called off due to injuries. So I kind of took it that way, and I get what you're saying, because I think that subtlety is not your friend in wrestling, you know? So no. I think that rather than playing that way, he should have been more, like, blatantly, glaringly going after the cut and working it over more.
And part of that is, you know, there a lot of them, they're trying to play into a lot more MMA elements, and there is a crossover. Like, I mean, I watched my good amount of MMA, but I've kind of tuned out the last year or two of it, mainly because I work mornings and stuff, so being out late watching UFC is not conducive to getting up at 4:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. Pro wrestling has always been the worst glaring thing people say about wrestling is if you don't connect to the audience on what convey to the audience on what you're doing, and they weren't conveying it. But when you're explaining it, yeah, okay, I can see that.
Right, and that's just a little bit too subtle, I think, for wrestling. But yeah, Phoenix selling amazing the whole way through, especially when he's on the floor bleeding and trying to get into the ring. And then Phoenix is, he's just so, he's so fucking good. You talked about it. I mean, I think I was probably a high man on Phoenix last year with a lot of people, and I kind of thought about it, and I think a little bit of his live bias. I mean, I've seen Phoenix wrestle live a lot, and in the room, that babyface underdog selling that he does that comes across great on tape is even better in person. You really feel for the guy.
But you do. You're right. Yeah. I mean, I bought his fucking mask. He blew me away live. I bought his fucking mask off his fucking head, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, I don't know. He's got, you know, on-tape charisma, but he's got small-room charisma that really just, you get into him. And he punctuates the selling and stuff with these just insanely crisp strikes that he does a lot of times, and then flying moves, you know, Rana, stuff like that. It's just, I mean, they come out of nowhere and they look great. That big, the kind of big flying up palm strike that he does to guys when they're sitting on the top rope, he does it here to Loki. It always looks just so fucking crisp, so good. The, you know, kind of spinning hook and kick that he'll do to guys in the side of the head always looks amazing. So it's like his best stuff is his selling and his underdog selling and fighting and bleeding and, you know, trying to fire up. But then he's got this great offense that a lot of guys like what Phoenix does here, I do get taken out of it when their comeback is two moves, you know? It's like they get their ass kicked and then their comeback, they hit two moves and somehow now they're in control and the other guy is not. But Phoenix, his stuff, a lot of his stuff looks so good that I get caught up in the moment and I don't even really, it doesn't cross my mind as much. So that's a big plus for him. My biggest issue with this match, honestly, why this match probably, I think honestly, I would have gone a lot higher and actually had this probably match of the year contender level match. But something that really hurt it for me was the build. And so, like, you know, Quentin Moody, who I mentioned a few times here, he was raving about this match. He thought Phoenix's performance was great. Again, like I said, low-key performance is great here. But he also parachuted in and doesn't really watch MLW. And so he kind of just saw the match and it was great. Right. But to me, the build didn't make any fucking sense. The low-key, or the feud between the Lucha Brothers and Conan and Serena De La Renta didn't feel like it involved low-key. It felt like a side thing to her that she was dealing with, you know, contract negotiations backstage and fighting and all this stuff. And then we get into the match and Loki is ripping at the mask and blood and being vicious and all that. And it's, to me, I'm just like, why is this match being worked like this is the cap off of a blood feud instead of the start of a feud where the guy who's been framed as the hired gun assassin is realistically, he should be just doing a job here. He's a professional. He's taking out Phoenix because his boss.
I think it's because they're doing it again. It's subtle, and I think it's because him and Conan were tight, and Conan went his other way and took some of his people away from Serena, and now it's personal. And Phoenix was the surrogate for Conan because Conan can't do the matches.
Right, and that's another one where it's been too subtle because I know that he has mentioned stuff about Conan and his past in his promos, but it hasn't felt like they're really telling me the story. So to me, when I was watching the match, I'm like,
and a lot of that history is in TNA where a lot of people didn't fucking watch it.
True. So for me, that was my biggest glaring kind of issue with the match, is that I just couldn't get into the context of why Loki was being so much more vicious here. Loved the finish with the mask pulling. I'm with you that I don't think you should have another fuck finish on the same show with a good fuck finish here in the main event that plays off of history with Lucha losing the mask. Everything that you got there, you can tease building into more stuff and just going forward. So yeah, me, I give this 3¾ star. Like I said, if it wasn't for the presentation, I think hurting the match, this is probably match of the year contender level match for me, just because both of these guys can be great, and both guys were really firing here, and they just really meshed well together.
Yeah, I agree with you. The match still to me just felt like it was missing something, and maybe you're right. Maybe this should have been like a culmination, but maybe this is going to lead to something else between the guys. Hopefully the company realizes, hey, we have something here. But we'll also see. And also, you know, also pecking order always weird because, you know, he's a tag team champion versus the world champion, and I don't know. This felt more than just a normal title defense, you know, especially with the blood and stuff. And yeah, I can kind of see where I totally see where you're coming from. But yeah, they really need to start hammering home the surrogate of Conan type of thing. That these guys are Conan by proxy in a way, because Conan can't work in the ring anymore.
Yeah.
You know, for a show that I hated a lot was on the show, but the main event kind of saved it, so I got to give it a thumbs up show for today, even with the shit booking of Callahan and Havoc and the, you know, the double squirrely finishes, heat finishes, and then the mediocre promos. One good match, I guess, was able to save it for me, and it helped that it was the last thing I remember on the show.
Right.
So I'm going to give it a thumbs up, but I'm definitely going to have an asterisk next to it. What about you, man?
Yeah, it's an MLW thumbs up, which means, you know, it's an episode of MLW. So it was a good episode of MLW, and it peaked in the main event, which is also the title match, which is what you want as a wrestling company. I think you want your best match to be the main event and the match with the championship. So I'll give it to them on that. They were able to peak in the right spot, and they had that good match, but... You know, one good match and a decent Tom Lawler promo does not make me happy that I sat through an hour-long TV show, you know?
No. I'm a little nervous that they're going to use Phoenix as the setup and have Pentagon get the match with all the stips, you know?
Right. And, I mean, weirdly, Pentagon needs it more.
Yeah,
but,
to hide it because he can't work as well as his brother. But
selfishly, I would rather Phoenix be the one who gets that, because I was going to say, I mean, this match is probably Phoenix's best match since the Mil Muertes match, the, you know, Grave Consequences or whatever. And that was, you know, also the stip helps. I mean, Phoenix is good. He doesn't need the stip, but, you know, it doesn't hurt. It's not going to hurt him to have cool stips and matches that feel important.
Agreed. Well, let's transition over to NXT. And we have Nikki Cross, and she's all wacky. But you know what? She comes across as quite the heel here. Like, hey, Bianca, let's play, you know? I mean, and because she's coming across nutty, coming across as someone who'd be in a Kevin Sullivan faction. She doesn't come across as a babyface at all if you don't know the whole backstory, you know? If you're coming in on this episode, you would believe Nikki Cross is a deranged serial killer heel. Right? Or am
right,
I wrong?
Yeah, and that's what she's probably best suited as with this character, honestly. So, yeah, and it worked here.
And I think what happened for her is she got over because she was with that dull-ass Sanity for so fucking long.
Right.
Oh, God. Candice LeRae versus Lacey Evans.
There was a little tease there, too. I don't know if you noticed, but at the end she says, you know, she saw something or...
Yes.
So clearly she's teasing that she knows who did the attack on Aleister Black, so that's going to be interesting. Maybe she's even involved with it, which will be nice, because like you said, a heel thing, if she's somehow involved with another heel group, of maybe even her and just one other person who attacked Aleister, that could be a good direction for her.
Yeah, maybe. What do you think of Candice and Lacey Evans?
You mentioned Lacey's size last week, but man, the size shows here. I mean, with Candice, she's so much bigger. This match was not terrible. Candice is obviously very good. I think we talked about that many times. But this did not have a lot of anything to me, except for one thing that stood out, which was the Cobra Clutch, that the fucking commentators are even talking about. you know, Lacey taking the advantage of it with the referee's positioning. The referee's out of position, and she's pulling her hair while she's in a cobra clutch. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, but there's some bridges that are just too far. You know, I mean, I buy into a lot of stupid shit in wrestling, but tell me why the submission is worse because your hair's getting pulled. Yeah. You know, it just, yeah, that was just kind of horse shit. Lacey Evans' right hand, it's, I mean, it's equally as bad as when Big Show started using just to punch as his finish. I just, it always comes out of nowhere, but not really something that you get into because you see punches so fucking often now in wrestling that it just doesn't feel like,
and good matter. Punches too, much yeah. better punches.
Yeah, so I don't like.
I was on my notes. I kind of referenced that where I think one, she's a heel. Let her do a loaded glove or load up on them little gloves she wears to the ring to begin with.
Right. Something and, you that know, makes sense. Yeah. Something that makes sense.
Yeah, and then boom, then knocks her out cold. So at least she has an illegal object in there and gives her more heat. And it's something that's different. They're doing it's something different that they're doing with her that they're not doing with anybody else. I mean,
yeah. One thing that
I don't know if I want to waste a good idea on Lacey Evans, right. but I mean, if you think this is a good idea, I'd much rather see her, you know, load up the glove, get booed behind the ref's back. You know, yeah. I'm just curious if she's good enough to pull it off, or worker, because you know. Ted DiBiase did a hell of a job in Mid-South doing it for years.
Well, I was going to say you could have Lawler show her, and you don't have to worry about any sexual yeah. harassment stuff because she's out of his age range.
Bada boom.
But yeah, one thing that I liked out of the match, though, was the post-match where they took the moment to go shoot, get a camera shot of her again because she looked like she was in a fight, and I thought that was good. You know, I thought that put over that this was a real match, and it looked like a real fight, and she was worse for the wear afterwards.
Yep. And then, so this is where we get Adam Cole and Pete Dunne and Ricochet. This is where I mentioned Cole just comes across, star power goes up just when he's in a suit. I thought this was a well-produced package and makes you excited for the big ability to this match. It felt like it was something they're building to on the pay-per-view, but I guess not. They're building to this sucker next week. And then, man, they've really built this up like this is a big fucking deal. So kudos to them. What do you think of this package?
Yeah, package was great. I thought that they did a good job. Ricochet, Ricochet has his star power that just comes across no matter what. Adam Cole in the suit feels like a big deal. Adam Cole I've talked about many times, but, I mean, the guy in prepackaged stuff like this, doing commentary, doing, you know, his little kind of
this is bread and butter.
Yeah, this is what he's great at. And then, you know, Pete Dunne is feels like a long for the ride, honestly. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
I'm a fellow ginger beard, which is a tough one to rock. I'm actually clean shaven right now for the first time in years. But one thing that is definitely not it is the kind of ginger little bit of a goatee thing. Does not look good, buddy. It doesn't make you look like a star. Like, for me, my facial hair is either full, big old mountain man beard. I think you can pull that off with the ginger beard, or clean shaven. But a little bit of wisps here and there and a goatee and a mustache does not look super cool when it's bright red. So, unfortunately, Pete Dunne loses a little bit of star power when you get an up-close picture of him, and he looks like he's got fire ants running around his mouth because he didn't wipe away the peanut butter and jelly sandwich that he had for lunch or something. It just looks ridiculous. So, but yeah, the package was done really well, and I'm excited for the matchup. You talk about this, but you know, it's kind of the opposite, where instead of putting the title into the feud, you got, you know, the two champions, and you're throwing a third guy in there who's the former champion. And one thing that I found really weird, it's just like, I don't know if it matters that much for this feud. I guess it kind of does in some ways, but I think it was really weird that, like, it really did feel like, with how quickly the title went from Adam Cole to Ricochet, that it almost didn't make sense that Ricochet didn't just win that ladder match and be the first champion. But I guess it gives Cole something to talk about and lord over the fact that he was the champion and all that, because he made.
Yeah, I think it was part of the they gave him, like, they, you know, I think it was part of the idea, and I don't think they presented it very well, was that he was somehow scoring these big wins, but barely survived, like War Games and then the ladder match. I just think it was a poorly executed something to get him heat, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, I don't think it pulled off to where it made sense. It really felt like it was it could have just been Ricochet won the title to begin with at this point.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, it doesn't hurt it, and I do think that that'll be definitely be a great match.
Agreed. Forgotten Sons vignette, you know, I think we've seen them, so.
Yeah. Anything it would be annoying, but I guess it's kind of the new thing. It's like this is their way of hyping that they're about to have a match. But it's like, you know, I guess the way that was done more frequently in wrestling is you would just cut to the people in the back or something, or even have them cut some kind of actual promo talking about the match. But instead they do a vignette, which does feel weird.
It does. It feels odd, especially, you know, once we've introduced and we've seen said vignette, you know. We get Ciampa interview. He kind of comes across as like a hybrid Stone Cold Triple H act, which I don't know if it's a good thing or not for longevity, when, you know, those are two of the biggest stars in the history of the company. But I don't know, just something about him that he just doesn't stand out. But I enjoyed his promo, don't get me wrong, but it just felt like I'm watching Stone Cold Triple H. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about that he was hitting on all cylinders for the past couple weeks, but it's been out in the crowd. It's the way he carries himself in front of the crowd and the way the crowd reacts to him was really making him come across like he's hitting that next level as a performer. And then this stuff is so separated from that yeah, it doesn't feel as special at all. Not bad, but also it doesn't feel like he has any focus. I don't know what he's, you know, where he's going next, anything.
Yeah, like we don't have a real opponent for him.
Yeah, so it just feels like kind of meandering and not terrible, but not great, you know?
Like they don't want to go back to Johnny Gargano because that card's been played. But yeah, it seems like he's a champion in limbo. That's just, which has got to suck. That should never happen. He should always be the kinetic energy to the promotion. Then we get Forgotten Son squash. Amazing. One of them working with a fucking fractured face. Unbelievable. I guess when you get your debut, you don't want to give up your spot. So kudos to him.
Yeah, it was Cutler, and he's been in NXT, or he's been in the Performance Center for a long time. So, yeah. He's not going to give this chance up.
Yep, he ain't giving up his spot. Then we get a Shayna Baszler segment. I don't know. This one, I'm always excited for the Baszler segments. This one felt flat, and I think maybe it's because of Kairi Sane just not being able to carry it with a promo or something to that effect. It didn't make the feud come across special, if you ask me. What do you think?
Yeah, it's another one where they're NXT does so many of these overproduced segment things, and they work with Adam Cole, Ricochet, Pete Dunne thing, but then there's other people like I think that Shayna, Ciampa, they should be out in front of the crowd. There's something about their promo styles and the way that they're presented as characters that really gets so much energy from the crowd, even when they're not wrestling, just out there talking. So this just feels muted because you don't get that crowd reaction to what's going on.
Very fair. Then we get a Bianca Belair promo interview, and this worked, you know.
Yeah.
But I can totally see why her and who's she? Montel Ford. I totally see them together. I totally buy them as a couple. Because I think they're both them. They come across as pretty obnoxious, pretty full of themselves. It's funny, you know. You have Montel Ford who's a babyface, Bianca Belair is the heel, and Bianca Belair is pretty much playing the Montel Ford character as a heel.
Right.
So it's interesting. And that, I mean, you know, all the backstory, but it worked here. What do you think of the segment?
And she's undefeated. She brought back the catchphrase, like I mentioned it last time, when she was too out of it to say, it's back here. So, I mean, good as a heel, she's putting it together. She's one where the wrestling was early. It was she's a little shaky, but she's definitely talented. And then really quickly, it was like, damn, she's actually good. Like. She's not just a freak athlete who does like a cool spot. She makes everything work. She looks good out there. She's another one who's physical. And then the promos, it's like, the promos obviously super scripted, a little shaky, but she's getting it. And I think, yeah, I think that with the, you know, the women's evolution, revolution, everything that's going on, I think that she's got a possible bright future because she's at the right time frame where they want to push women, especially women of color, and she's actually really good and can fit a lot of roles, I think. I think that you have her, well, I don't know how she'll be as a babyface promo, but I think you have her do a lot of the same kind of stuff, and people will naturally want to get behind her because she's just so impressive, so... right now, great heel, but we'll see how she moves forward. I think she could possibly be a babyface too.
I think in 2019 she'll be carrying the women's division in NXT. Right. Yeah, she'll be the champ at that point. We got Gargano versus Tony Nese. I enjoy them bringing in the 205 Live guys. You know, I think it's a good treat, and honestly, I wouldn't mind them bringing in the 205 guys on for a showcase match, maybe once a month on NXT television. You know, get that champion, get the champ to go out and about, give guys challenging of NXT guys, other 205 guys. I think it's something they can do with NXT that make it a little more standout-ish in a way. And again, you know, Nice is good. Gargano is the best worker in NXT, legit, arguably, and good solid stuff early on. I thought they had a good legitimate arena quarter star match. Real good stuff. What do you think of it, man?
Yeah, definitely. I'm with you on that. Pretty much everything there. It feels similar to, you know, when Cesaro came down to NXT to start wrestling. And had his feud with Sami Zayn early on when NXT was happening, where it doesn't really feel like Nese is being demoted or like being sent down to NXT. If he feels like, you know, he's bringing NXT up a little bit to his level, even though he's just a, you know, kind of just a nothing guy on 205 Live. It doesn't feel like, oh, he's being sent down to NXT for punishment, which is good. It felt like a good showcase match. It also feels like, you know, they're throwing it in the crowd's face. They're like, oh yeah, you think Johnny Gargano is just some short, you know, brunette, dull wrestler. We'll show you short, brunette, dull wrestlers. We'll send Tony Nese down there to really show you how boring and you know, bland a guy can be. No, but then the match was good, and it really felt like a good spark to help give Gargano back some energy. The crowd was into him here. They were behind him. You know, they weren't booing him, Johnny Failure, all that. He gets the big win. Feels like, you know, a little bit of rehab for the guy who seemed like he had lost his way. So all in all, this was a good move on the booking overall for them. And I'm with you. I think some 205 Live guys who feel like they're getting lost in the shuffle a little bit, similar to when Cesaro came down to NXT, when Tyson Kidd came down to NXT. It's like, you can get a little juice behind you by having a couple good showings in NXT with a certain segment of the crowd, and it's turning into it. The vocal minority does actually kind of spread even further. If some buzz gets around that, oh, actually, did you hear Tony Nese had some really good matches in NXT? Did you hear about that? Oh, did he? And then the main roster, somehow the fans there start to care too, you know? And so, you know, it's not necessarily a terrible idea.
Yeah, good point. Then we get a Birch and Larkin together, and they give us kind of like a retrospective of them joining forces in their tag match, and I really appreciate their candor and honesty in the reactions they got from the last show, and I thought this was a really neat segment. What about you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. This is one where it worked. Like I talked about, the kind of overproduced vignette stuff works sometimes, doesn't it? It sucks that we've had so much on this episode of all the same, all videos like this, all prepackaged, put together videos. If some of the promo stuff had happened in the ring and then this, then it wouldn't feel as monotonous. But it's like when the ones are good and they hit, it makes you understand why they do them, but you just wish that they would tone it down a little bit. It's so funny to say it about vignettes and video packages, but less is more, right? You know, it doesn't matter what you're talking about. If you have less of it, it always kind of stands out a little bit more.
And that leads us into the main event of Lars Sullivan versus EC3. These guys are getting no reaction whatsoever.
Yeah.
Sullivan better retire that top rope headbutt. I mean, that's why the main reason Harley Race was crippled right now, and is because of doing spots like that. And Sullivan, there's no way he should be doing that spot. But overall, yeah, I enjoyed what we got here, which was a big Haas battle, but the crowd just didn't buy Colt in any role whatsoever. So that made it tough. Yeah. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, is it miscasting? Is it because EC3 is not a good babyface? What is the reason that the crowd didn't get behind it? Because in my living room, the match was getting over. I mean, these guys were kicking each other's asses. You know, Sullivan gets this huge gash on his back. EC3's eye gets busted open. There's blood. I mean, and one of the craziest parts about this is EC3 was on the original NXT. This guy has been, I guess he wasn't in the first season, but he was on NXT when it was a fucking game show. He's been wrestling for a while. Lars Sullivan is a relative rookie, you know? And this match felt like Lars Sullivan brought EC3 up to his level. It felt like this match was presented to get, even though EC3 lost, it felt like you bought into EC3, I bought into EC3 more because he was able to hang and bang with this monster. And Sullivan gave him enough, cut him off enough, was just brutal and stiff enough to where at the post-match, I talked about it with Lacey Evans, but the post-match on EC3, he didn't look like he was in a fight. He looked like he was in a car accident. Dude's spitting blood. Is, you know, his eye is busted open. His arm is looking wrecked. There's just, this was presented super well. It showed, again, Lars Sullivan, a guy I think we're both pretty high on, but it shows he's skilled beyond his years already as a wrestler. I think he's really taken to this well. He's a guy that I was shaky on in the beginning. I did not expect him to have this much, but he's definitely putting it together. And I think this match helps EC3 as a babyface. Unfortunately, the crowd just didn't get into it. But for me, the presentation of EC3 as a babyface is improved by just standing and having this big time fight with this monster. So I really like the way that this was presented. And again, I just don't know if the crowd in the building was just tired. It's the end of the tapings or what the issue was there. But yeah, the reactions were not with it and did not give this match what I thought it deserved.
Yeah, and that was NXT for the week. I thought overall I enjoyed it. What about you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Good episode. A little overkill with the vignettes, but that's kind of becoming a trope of NXT recently. But not bad enough to hurt the episode. Good matches that when we got them. Good storyline stuff moving forward. And no interviews with William Regal about who attacked Aleister Black, so that was a plus for this week.
I totally agree. But hey, let's check out ProWrestling.com to explore other podcasts along with match reviews, features, and retrospective reviews of wrestling books, video games, and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances in non-wrestling TV shows and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at Pro Wrestling Only forums. We've been online for over a decade with a roster of 2,000 registered members and an article of cover 4 billion threads. Our message board is a vibrant community all its own. Whether you want to talk about a specific match in our match discussion archive, take a deep dive in the Microscope forum, or discuss more general topics from wrestling's past and present, check out all this and more at ProWrestlingOnly.com. Come on, guys. Come join the revolution. Join ProWrestlingOnly.com. On to our main event show.
A little plug for a specific podcast this week is, I would say, Military Industrial Suplex. This week have the Big Boss Man from the new and improved PWO site, Charles Loss, you may know him as, interview talking about the retrospective, I think, of PWO being put together, the formation of the site, everything, and the revamping of the site. So really cool podcast to check out this week, so I definitely recommend that. And it's hosted by my good buddy Tom Batista, who has failed to make it out to Los Angeles to watch PWG with me on, I think, 4 different occasions now. So Tom, the ball is continuously in your court. You need to make it out here as soon as possible.
There you go. Pressure's on, brother. Nova Pro, the Nova Project 4, this is their anniversary show. Streamed live on Powerbomb TV So we didn't get the dark matches. So there was a few of them. And but we opened up.
There was one dark match that particularly stands out that I'm upset that we didn't get, which is John Kerman versus Kane Justice. Two guys I think could kill it together.
Yep. And they've been building that angle for a while, and we missed it. Oh, well. Eric Rowe versus Two Cold Scorpio doing his black on black wrestling tour reunion. Yeah.
Jesus.
Seems like he's just wrestling all black guys, which I can understand. You know, a lot of African Americans who grew up on wrestling were probably influenced by Scorpio to some degree. So this is like a big hero. I know Ace Royal was super stoked and excited to wrestle him. So I get it. I mean, I totally understand it. I enjoyed it. I gave it 2 3/4. I thought you could tell Royal's excited right off the bat. He has a little extra pump in his step, and the guy doesn't need it, but he definitely had it. I love when Scorpio did his dance and it went back to Royal, and Royal ends up doing the Pee Wee Herman tequila dance. I thought that was fucking fabulous. Scorpio sells of Royal's dive was great. Nice near fall with the spinning backbreaker. I thought it was really good, and I bought that as a finish. Space Jam looked fucking awesome in this match. Like, fuck. Like, he planted Scorpio big time. 2 3/4. Really good stuff. And, I was never the biggest Scorpio guy. I definitely have a lot of great moments with Scorpio, but I was never one of those guys who thought he was like a top tier worker. I was always more into the Benoits, the Malenkos, the Ultimo Dragon type guys. But I totally get it. I totally understand the hero worship. I thought his Scorpio could have some phenomenal. He definitely has a treasure trove of really good matches throughout his career. What do you think of the match?
Yeah, I thought it was great too. I gave it 3 stars. I'm pretty much with you on most of the stuff you mentioned there. Loved the finish, the big tackle. Loved Scorpio repeatedly teasing, calling to the fans for the big flips and dives off the top. Ace Royal is a guy that's just, I mean, it's fucking criminal that he's not out more, that he's not doing more.
He's not on NXT.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big one, right? I mean, the guy is, he's legitimately one of the best wrestlers on the fucking planet, I think, and it's just, it's so hard to justify, you know, voting him super high when you do the end of the year awards because he doesn't get out much, but when he, every fucking match, he's so good. He's so good. And I was just, I'm loving this match. Too Cold Scorpio looks really good with his spots and when he needs to be there, but you know, Eric Royal is just on fire. Everything he does is just so perfect for not just the execution, but for his character work, everything. I mean, the guy is just so fucking good.
That leads us to Lufisto versus Faye Jackson. What do you think of this?
This was a good kind of, not necessarily coming out party, but sort of a coming out party for the new, more serious Faye Jackson here with Lufisto, with her history and her veteran status. And she takes it to her, and they really, you know, go at it hot and heavy at times. Both bigger girls, both can bruise, both can, you know, bring it with some ass-based offense. I thought really good work from both of them. Really, really, you know, solid back and forth. A little bit too back and forth, I would say, at times. I think that, not enough transitions that really felt like they're earned and built to. Just kind of, you know, your turn, my turn at times. At the end, I talked about it in NXT a couple times. Really, really enjoyed the kind of feeling like something was, you know, it felt like you were in a fight. The post-match on this did not feel like it was being sold as if this was a real fight. And they brought it to each other in the match. So I would have loved for Faye Jackson to really look like she had been through something at the end, but she looked just as poised leaving as she did coming in. So that kind of didn't make sense to me. I gave it 2.25. I thought the finish felt a little flat, not just because it felt like it wasn't built to, like I said, because of just kind of back and forth so much, but also because the finishing, the actual move that she used, didn't look impressive enough to be the finisher after everything that happened here. So good stuff, and I think a good kind of starter for if Faye Jackson's going to be a little bit more serious, darker character, and not as kind of light and funny and light and fun. You can move forward here with something a little bit more serious with her coming out of this. But she didn't kind of knock it out of the park with her first showing of being a little bit more serious, it seems.
Yeah, I'm with you on everything you said there. I don't have much to add. I give it 2 stars. I thought it was all solid stuff. Then we get to a multiple man with Isaiah Frazier versus Mac Butt.
What is it? Mac Buckler. Might be one of the family members, it sounds like, based on
how other people Josh on Fuller.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. I gave it 2.25. But this is one of my problems with the show is there's a lot of these multi man matches on there, and it's like they lose their luster when there's more than one on there, and we had this one. We had a scramble. So I mean, it's just like I don't know. I'm big on just one multi man match a show makes it stand out a little bit. Having more than one, and then kind of it gets lost in the shuffle, and that's what this one did. Not a bad match, but it just gets lost in the shuffle. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, I gave it 2 stars. All the guys looked proficient. And the match was fine, but it felt like it was just forced into the card. It's just here. I think it was a challenge or an offer up match from another promotion with their title on the line. So it didn't feel like they really put much into presenting that as a big deal that they're doing that. It felt more like probably thinking they're doing a favor for whatever promotion they're putting these guys in there for. So it doesn't feel like the match is important. But it was good. Everyone in there looked like they belong in a wrestling ring, you know, which is it's not something you can always say when it's like kind of just thrown together multi-mans that happen in some shows, you know.
I totally agree. And that leads us to Tim Dunn. Oh yeah, and then we got a post match where Frazier gets beat up, right?
Yeah, his manager turns on him, and then this wild wacky pack of guys all come together, and I talked about Jason Cade and Rip Gideon not having a uniform look, but these guys, I mean, god damn, it looked like they just picked out random, you know, creative wrestlers from all these different places and shoved them into one stable together.
Yep. What do you think of Dunst versus Brokiller?
I have like probably a really bad Dunst bias that I can't really get over. I've never liked him since really the beginning. Like early on I thought he was okay in Chikara, but ever since then, like when he lost the headgear and everything, I've just never been a fan. So it's tough. I mean, the match was not terrible, but it was very quick. Didn't give me a lot to get into. Dunst looked fine, and actually, is it Brokeller? When he was on offense, some of his stuff looked really good. Seems like a guy who, I don't know his experience level, but it seems like he's got the tools, he just needs to put it together, get a little bit more comfortable, wrestle a little bit more. I give the match 2.25 star. Thought it was good, but you get the three-way before it, then you get this, and now this is like you talked about, this is the problem with the Nova show, is the middle of the card just kind of starts to, everything bleeds together, there's just a bunch of scrambles, a bunch of random guys, matches just happening. So yeah, it doesn't help when they kind of have two matches back to back that I'm not super enthused on.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. So I gave it 3.5. I really liked this a lot. I liked the nice feeling out process. I liked I thought the grappling looked like they had had stakes to it. Dunst starts working, stomping them. I like that, big stomps. A little scrappy exchange there. Both guys working hard. a great near fall on the cutter. The death sentence was brutal. Yeah, I mean, I really liked it. 3.5 stars. Thought they had a match of the night at that point. That leads us to the Ugly Ducklings versus the Hooligans in a, I guess, ladders, tables, and duckies match.
Yeah, it's a DLC match. The winner becomes downloadable content in the next WWE video game, I think.
Yeah, I really wasn't feeling this. Give it 2.5. Felt it went too long. Some of the strikes were kind of like, eh. I didn't buy into it. But plenty of big bumps. Very entertaining match. But clearly it was just okay and didn't resonate with me. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I had a moment where I was like taken aback because I was pretty into the Hooligans before the injury, and I was like kind of everything they were doing I thought was always good. Everything felt wild brawls, really into it. They stood out. They had their own unique style and look. Everything they did. And then in the middle of this match, I'm just like, God, it almost feels kind of like going through the motions in some ways. They're just kind of doing stuff. There's some good brawling action that happens. There's even some interesting stuff, especially the finish with the chair and all that. It felt slightly contrived, but I kind of liked it. And it was good because it wasn't blatant to me. I think that it wasn't until kind of close to when it happened that I was like, oh, it'll make sense. He's got the chair tied to his back so that he can do the, you know, ducks fly together with the chair to add to it. So it was nice because it wasn't so blatant in the beginning, and it kind of developed into, oh, that makes sense. So I kind of like that. That kind of worked. I thought it was funny that even the ducks, like with the old wrestling trope where if you set something up, you're the one who takes the bump in it. They even did that with the rubber duckies here as the ducks bring them out, and then they end up taking the Hooligans bring out the ducks, and then they end up taking the bump in the ducks, which I just thought was really funny that even the ducks, you have to, you know, have to be safe, and I know I can trust it because I put them out, you know. I thought that was funny. I gave it 2.75. I like both teams a lot. I thought that there was some good action and there was some inventive stuff going on here. But yeah, I mean, it feels like it was only, you know, I mean, well, before the Hooligans with the injury, and then just a few months ago with the ducks, where it felt like everything they did was just gold, and they were just like this hot act that put everything on fire. And I thought about it even before the match started. I was like, man, the Ducks have really been able to drag this gimmick out for a while and stay over and continue to have good matches. But I don't want to say for sure, but it does feel like maybe they need to think about doing something to freshen it up here pretty soon, because it is getting a little bit just feeling, like I said, going through the motions, samey, kind of doing the same stuff over and over.
What do you think of the scramble match with Parnell and Ken Dixon and John Skyler? Graham Bell and Harlan Bravado and Shane Murdoch?
What is it? Yeah, Shane Manders.
Manders, there we go.
I liked this actually for a scramble. I thought that they used the scramble format well. Could have done without like two different like three-man doomsday device. One was an attempt, the other one, or not doomsday, but a Tower of Doom spot. Like one of them actually happened, the second one was more of a tease, but... Just, I don't know. The Tower of Doom spot, to me, I think...
What about the bazooka gimmick?
The bazooka opening the match was funny. I popped for it a little bit. It was stupid.
First one's funny. Second one, it overstayed its welcome, right?
Right, yeah, for sure. And then, yeah, when it continues. Good action, like I said. Bravado stood out as being very, very good as a base for a lot of stuff and really, really, really professional. Jake Parnell looked good for his spots, vicious and violent when he was getting his stuff in. So yeah, I gave it 2.75 star. For a scramble match, it was pretty good, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was. I gave it 2.75. Totally enjoyed it. Yeah, all action. Nothing to complain about. Then we got Sage Phillips and Jonathan Gresham versus Dominic Guarini and Kevin Koo. This is my first time seeing Guarini and Koo as the tag team, and they came across as one of the best tag teams in the world here. They were violent, check. Scary, check. Out for plunder. Looks like they could do plunder matches, check. They had an aura about them where you believe that they were massive ass kickers, They had that Steiner Road Warrior aura about them. I like how they attacked early. Love and Dom as the bully tag team. Dom taking Sage out was great. Hot tag to Phillips. Love the modified Midnight Express double goozle high low hit. Marked out huge for it. Give it 3.25. And I'm a big Dom fan, so I like to see him in single matches, and I like Kutu too. But together they came across as just massive ass kickers, and then the team that doesn't quite I don't know what other team out there would fit this bill, but they're like scarier than the War Raiders in a way. I felt like they had a better aura than the War Raiders, which says something, because I thought the War Raiders were like the best badass Big Apple, you know, tough guy tag team. But this team came around, and I would put them in that same type of category. Really good stuff here. What'd you think?
Yeah, I'm loving Ku and Dom together. I think I've seen them maybe once or twice before this in I think probably Black Label Pro as a team.
Yeah, and I saw them when they were in a scramble, but it wasn't the same, you know.
Yeah, and they are they're great together. They feed off of each other in a way. When you talk about being badasses and ass kickers, it's like they feel like they kick more ass together, obviously. Like each one of them, their ass kicking quotient is increased by watching the other one kick ass. It makes them more fired up to want to do it more. So they just kind of antagonize each other that way, which is fantastic. And I think a team, you compare them to the War Raiders, that's definitely a good one, because they come across more real. War Raiders can come across a little cartoony with everything. So these guys come across like you could actually run into them on the street and they would fuck you up. You know, and it's just scary.
Yeah, they don't need the paint. They know they're badasses.
Yeah, and I think another team to compare them to, you talk about it with the being athletic, being, you know, real sport guys, being real shooters, is they kind of come across like the Chosen Bros without that chill vibe, you know, because you got the Stoner Riddle and the Island Boy with Jeff Cobb, and they both come across cocky, confident, and they can kick your ass and take you apart. But they're just doing it as a sport, as an athletic endeavor, just to, you know, make money and prove that they're the best because they like doing it. These guys come across similarly, but they're also vicious. They're vicious and violent, and they're doing it not just to win, but to hurt you. Against two probably the best possible opponents for them, just with their style. I mean, two undersized guys. You got Grisham, who's believable on being able to hold his own, and you got Phillips as the kind of the weak link who's going to sell and bump and do everything he does here, but also have some dynamic offense when he can. I'm not hugely into Sage Phillips, but I thought that he was good in his role here. I don't know if I said I gave the match 3.5 stars. I thought all four guys looked great. Dominic Green and Kevin Koo tag team is a tag team that I would love to see more of. I want more promotions to see it, not just the same promotions that these guys already work in, booking them in tags. I want them getting bookings as tag teams in other places where they're established primarily as a tag team, because I think that's where you could start getting some really cool stuff with them.
That leads us into, I'm with you. I'm like, I really want to see more of this tag team. Logan East and LaRue versus Alexander James. Loser leaves Nova Pro. What's going through your mind when this match is happening?
I feel fucking bad because I feel like I'm penalizing James on this one. And it's not fair to him because he wrestled a great match. But it felt like he was wrestling a completely different match than Logan here. The stipulation fit with the way that Alexander James was working. It felt like he was invested in this. He was trying to really kick this guy's ass. He's trying to save his career. It's not just about that, but it's also a violent, you know, blood feud between two former stablemates and friends on top of the stipulation. And then it felt like when Logan was in charge, he was doing the same sticky play to the crowd heat that he does in every match. And it felt like with James turning up the aggression and the heat that Logan should have been doing the same thing, but he didn't. And he just felt like he really dropped the ball for me in that regard. And it sucks because he's a guy who me and you have both been talking up this year as a great worker for his character stuff, as a good heel, as someone who can get actual crowd heat. And it felt like he was too afraid to step out of his kind of comfort zone. And in this match with this gimmick and this setting, I think he really needed to. James, I thought Alexander James did a great job, and he almost carried his end enough to kind of bring it up for both guys, but it really hurt the match for me. The work was fantastic. Both these guys are really good workers, but it was the character details. It was that attention to making the stipulation make sense that was really missing from Logan, and it hurt the match for me quite a bit. So much so that I gave the match 2.75 stars, even though I actually really liked the match and I thought that Alexander James was really good. I just felt like it was really hard for me to invest in the story of the match when Logan, like I said, was playing up kind of sticky heel bullshit the whole time, still waving to the crowd, still doing the stuff that he does in every match, not acting like the stipulation mattered, not acting like it mattered to him that he's going up against a guy who used to be one of his partners. So that just really, really hurt the match for me quite a bit.
I liked it more than you. I gave it 3.75. I love the low level ofness. I like the grittiness here. Loving James throwing the lecturer early on. I like that. My God, the floor. The floor lawn dart bump was freaking amazing. I thought James starting to work on the arm told a story. Believed them saying I hate each other's arms. I like James stepping on the arm. Believe these guys hate each other. They did a good job, can we believe? I just thought some of the shots are just really brutal here. 3.75. I'm totally bought into this as a going away feud. These guys hate each other. Then we got a tag match with Angelus Lane and Jessica Havoc versus Alley Cat and Samantha Heights. I gave it 2.25. I mean, not Samantha Heights. Who was that?
It was Angelus Lane and Tara Calloway versus Alley Cat and Brittany Blake.
There we go. And I gave it 2.5. I thought it was a good solid tag. Good southern tag. I just felt they were in a bad spot having to follow this, and then right before the main event. What were your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, really similar. I gave it 2.75. I thought the dynamic was done well with the smaller Brittany Blake getting worked over by the two much larger women, and then nice hot tag from Alley Cat. But yeah, I think that the positioning, not just the positioning, but also I think that Angelus Lane has been presented very strongly in Nova for a long time, but she feels like she's been kind of devalued recently. Not devalued, but kind of de-emphasized in the company recently, to the point where her in a tag team match like this just in the mid-card doesn't feel like as big of a deal. And I think it hurt, too, because this is, I think, a match that was supposed to help build the Alley Cat more, because her getting the win over Angelus Lane is a big deal in the storyline that they're doing with that. That she finally gets the win. But it feels like Alley Cat finally getting the pin on Angelus Lane in a tag team match that didn't feel like a big showcase matchup really isn't going to help her in the long run get over more.
Okay. So, yeah. I enjoyed it more than you. I thought Williams did a good job with her.
Oh, no. I was talking about the tag team match.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. We haven't gotten
okay, yeah, wait till talk about the main event then.
Okay, yeah. So the main event, we've got Tracy Williams versus Jordynne Grace for the Powerbomb TV title match. I thought that they did this is the closest that I've seen the Powerbomb championship being defended feel like an old NWA style setup, where the champion's coming in to face the kind of the number one prospect, the number one person of the territory. Jordynne Grace felt presented as if you could believe that she can win. This is her home, not her home promotion, but this is, you know, kind of a homesteaded promotion for her where she's a top person, super believable in the setting. I loved that build. I loved the way that that it was, you know, kind of actually executed as the match was going on. Williams did a good job of showing off his technical prowess, while Jordynne Grace repeatedly kind of showed off her muscle and her power. So him working over the legs was great, you know, trying to cut down the tree, trying to chop down the tree. Thought that was great, especially even when he's going for the intricate stuff and then he's going for the basic, just stomp on the ankle stuff, I think works. He comes across like he's the seasoned vet who's well-traveled. He's the champion. That's what I said. It really felt like that NWA champion style. He comes into town and is just, you know, he's on the grind. This is what he does. She may be the best in your little, you know, podunk, whatever city, but he's the champion. He's just that, you know, just that slightly better. And it doesn't even have to be overtly heel. He doesn't really come across as a heel at all. When, you know, even though Jordynne is a beloved babyface, he just came across like he's here to win. And he's just a really good wrestler, you know? And as it was building and as I was really getting into it, then the fucking finish, the finish that's an injury, really zonks the match because I was getting into it. I loved the build. I loved everything. Big, you know, you get this big crazy suicide dive from Jordynne and then she fucking rolls her ankle on nothing, you know, like just catching him off the top or whatever. Like, it sucks. It's that weird DDT thing that he does and she rolls her ankle off of that. And the match is just over. It feels like cut short, cut flat there. I was getting into it, and then that happens. So, unfortunately, I give it just 3 stars. I loved the feel of the match. I loved what we got, but the ending was a bummer that kind of took me out of enjoying the match as much as I probably would have otherwise.
Yeah, I give it 3 stars. I'm not a big fan of the intergender match, but I can buy Jordynne and Hot Sauce here because of the dynamic looking at him. I can buy into it. You're just scared because you know this scumbag is going to come back and... overall, kind of 3 stars. But man, overall, I thought it was a really good, fun show. I had a lot of good changes. What overall did you think of the show?
It was a good Nova show, honestly. And that might sound like I'm kind of being a backhanded compliment, but some of the Nova shows can be a little bit too much. This was good for the anniversary. I think they did a good job of presenting a really solid anniversary show that gives you a good taste of what makes Nova kind of a good promotion to keep up on.
Yeah, I think I would have like eliminated a match or two or done something different, like maybe put the Kane and Kerman on the main. And maybe put one of those, maybe put the Isaiah Frazier match underneath. Yeah. But I guess maybe because they were doing a heel turn, they wanted that on the main show. I mean, who knows? But there was a lot of, the multi-mans, I don't think we needed more than one, obviously.
Right.
But overall, I thought it was a good show. Thumbs up.
Yeah, for sure. Thumbs up show, for sure.
Anything you want to plug, my friend?
No, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Same old for me. Not much going on, you know. And check out the PWO site, obviously. What about you, Pete?
Yeah, follow me at Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. Worldcast Wednesdays. Every Wednesday, Kelly, Johnny, and I review the episodes of World Class. And we'll mix that in with some specials. And follow all the other exciting podcasts over there on our Pro Wrestling Only feed, and it's the new direction we're headed, and hope you guys stay around for the ride. I think you'll enjoy it, because I am. Have a good one.
I know you care about all the kosher, pretty things, but can you tell me what you don't fuck about, nigga?
I don't give a fuck about shit. Nice chain, red bone mains. Chain swing, like pretty things. Kick a bitch, call me Lil Kane. Dumb bitch, give me dumb brain. Wrist wet, wet like rain. Nike swoosh, white cocaine. Iceberg, at me like I am a jewel. I be posted with your